Welcome to the Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show. Culpepper and Marco Coleman will break down today's Jaguars game and take a look around the rest of the NFL, as well as take your calls, tweets, and Facebook questions. The Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show is brought to you by Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank. Let's get the show started. Here are Marco Coleman and Culpepper.
Welcome in, Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show. Culpepper, Marco Coleman. You can join the conversation at 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You can also jump aboard via Twitter if you like. You can tweet it to me, at Culpepper. Bueller Swiss Watch Company, proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss Watches are available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, the Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, the Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. This portion of the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show brought to you by Rouse Chiropractic Clinic. We started off with Marco's money player, and I have a pretty sneaking suspicion this is going to be a repeat performance.
Hey, it's Mr. Shorts, from Mountain Union. Mountain Union's finest, 11 straight championships. This is a championship player. I mean, you got to feel good that you got a guy like Shorts that knows how to win. Young stud, had a great game today, 100 yards. I mean, what can you say? I mean, he's the brightest spot on the whole team.
No doubt about it.
Stays in my big money playing position.
And by the way, just as a side note, because I know there are a lot of people who are highly critical of Gene Smith, if you're going to be critical of Gene Smith, and there's certainly reason to be, you got to give him credit for that pick.
You got to
take a guy in the third round
out of Mount Union.
I mean,
the OH10.
Yeah, I mean, it's a guy who certainly has I think he's outplayed his draft, overplayed his draft position at this point. Wouldn't you say?
He's done a great job. I like Seuss for Shorts.
All right, injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Didn't see any injuries of note today in the ball game. A couple of guys were hobbling around at one point during the game. Lowry and Blackman both looked like they were playing through it. Those are good signs, all things considered. You're looking for little things that might be a harbinger of something in the future. The team is hanging together. They're just not winning.
Yeah, I mean, that is one good thing to hang your hat on, is that there's no dissension, and you don't want to see that. That's the only way that you can overcome that, is by still staying together. Right now it's just about not having the talent to be able to get something done. These guys just need to get more talent and more focus in that locker room.
Try Sonny's Chicken and Ribs, only $10.99 to get a heap and help of barbecue chicken and sweet and smoky ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks and garlic bread or cornbread, all for only $10.99. Sonny's the first name in barbecue. Your calls when we come back, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You can also tweet it to me, at Culpepper, if you're on Twitter. Back with more of the Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show. Culpepper, Marco Coleman here. Scores from around the National Football League right now. Seattle really laying it on Buffalo, 24-0. Russell Wilson has two touchdown runs and a touchdown pass today, the rookie quarterback for Seattle. Carolina leading at San Diego, 21-0. That looks like a team that's quit to San Diego. Cam Newton has a touchdown pass. Mike Tolbert with two short touchdown runs. Dallas leads Pittsburgh 3-0, and is it just me, or is it just the HD, Marco? But it looks like Pittsburgh has
crisp.
Do they have yellow? Yeah, I was gonna say, do they have new yellow pants?
Sunshine.
That's a bright colors on Pittsburgh today. Oakland leading Kansas City 3-0 again. If Kansas City beats the Raiders, the Jaguars would be alone in the cellar, which would also be alone in the penthouse, if you want to think of it this way, as far as the draft stock is concerned. Again, listen, if you're going to be one or two, you might as well be one. But this is not the greatest year to be one or two.
It's like, what are you going to pick first?
I got plenty of needs, for sure. Yeah. Get a great deal on a Ford F-150 during truck month at your local Southern Ford dealer. Let's take some calls. Marco, what do you say?
Let's do it.
800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Rich in Orange Park. Rich, you're up here on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.
Hey, Rich.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Pretty good, man.
Yeah, so what a lousy game. But, I haven't been impressed with the coaching. You were talking about the coaching earlier. I haven't been impressed with the coaching all year. It seems like, every time beginning of the third quarter, other teams are making adjustments and we're not reacting. I read it, I think it was in the paper, where one of the defensive players said that the Jets came out last week in the third quarter in a totally different scheme that they had never seen before.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take a whole quarter to make adjustments to that. I can see maybe one series, but I just have not been impressed with our coaches' ability to make adjustments during the game.
Yeah, some of the time it's been an adjustment situation. I think last week with the Jets, the Jets, it wasn't that they came out and showed something different. They showed something that they hadn't shown on film all year. So it was, you know, that I understand it take a little longer to adjust to. And what it was, basically, as Jeff Loggeman showed on Jaguars.com, was that you had, they would put two guys in a wing and bring them inside and have the guard and a tackle pull. And so you kind of had this crisscross kind of block action. And so the Jaguars were misreading where the gaps were, so their gap assignment wasn't good. They did, as you notice, in the fourth quarter, had made those adjustments and really basically stopped the Jets offensively in the fourth quarter. Today, you know, looking at what happened, offensively didn't get anything done at all, mm-hmm. Okay? And obviously you score 3 points in a game, you don't get much done at all. So two things. One, I'd like to see him just force-feed Cecil Shorts the ball. I know he had 100 yards today, but he only had 6 catches. It wasn't like he had, 15 catches. Force-feed him the ball. I mean, get him in positions, especially with a team like Miami that did not have all of their, top cover guys out there. They had injuries. They had young guys. Force-feed him the ball.
How about those plays like they threw to Mercedes would have been good for Cecil Shorts.
Yeah.
You give him the ball in space, an opportunity. He's the type of player that can get the ball quickly and make a guy miss and pick up another 10 yards before he's caught. Mercedes is not that guy. So that was a poor utilization of talent in that regard as pertains to Mercedes.
And honestly, today, if you look at what happened in the third quarter for Miami offensively, really you're talking about a couple of big plays. Bush goes for 53, where obviously there was a leverage issue where you didn't get to the right spot. He's got the ability to make mm-hmm. that big play. He did. And then Tannehill got free for a 30-yard run. Those were the two big plays, and on both of those drives, the Jaguars stopped him and held him to field goal attempts. So while the numbers certainly were not very good today, again, in the third quarter, I don't think this was an adjustment situation. I'll have to go back and watch the film afterwards and see exactly what happened. But to me, I don't think it was an adjustment thing in this game for the third quarter. I think it was outplayed by some big plays, some big plays.
And those penalties kept drives alive on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. Negated drives and kept drives alive for us for the defense.
And then the inability to, convert on fourth and short.
Fourth down. Yeah, three of them. You're right.
But,
three.
But I don't think you could sit here and say, boy, this has been a precision job of coaching on this team this year. It also has not been a precision job of playing.
Not at all. I mean, so like I said, when you're 2-12, it is not just the players. There's a combination of things, and the coaches also have to take a brunt of the situation that the players are in right now.
Yeah, I just haven't been impressed with the coaches all year, but I'll be in the stands next weekend.
All right, Rich, look forward to seeing you. Stop by the tailgate show, say hey before the game. We appreciate
it. Thanks.
All right, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Fred on the south side, who's up next here on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Fred, how you doing?
Doing well today. How about yourself?
Good.
All right, Fred.
Good. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
A quick question. I remember early on in the season, and the talk about that we actually had a fair amount of talent. And I think our talent is actually underachieving, that we're not as bad talent-wise as we think we are. And I really do think that some of the blame needs to be pinned on Mularkey, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think some of it is coaching. I also think you've had some guys, again, if you talk about from the beginning of the year, some of the guys who we expected bigger things from either have been injured or haven't lived up to their potential. Derek Cox, when he's out there, you can see how good a player he is. He just hasn't been able to stay on the field. Rashad Jennings has not lived up to the expectations of him running the football. I don't think Terrence Knighton has lived up to the expectations of his play on the field. Cameron Bradfield, we've seen some good things, but we've also seen him, especially against speed rushers, the top pass rushers on that side, Mario Williams in Buffalo, mm-hmm. Cameron Wake today, he struggled. He still has a ways to go as far as that's concerned. But there have been guys who have certainly overachieved from what I think a lot of people would have expected. And Shorts is right at the top of that list, sure. But not having Daryl Smith, not having Maurice Jones-Drew, these things have hurt. And when you think about a team that's lost 3 games in overtime and did not have their best offensive and best defensive player, you could make the case mm-hmm. with those two guys. I talked in the locker room about this with a lot of the guys this week. Margin for error on this team is just very small. They do not have a margin for error because of that. Yeah. They don't have guys who are going to you know, above and beyond, you know, Shorts and maybe Blackman. They don't have guys who are going to suddenly take a bad play and turn it into a big play.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that margin for error.
No, you know, especially when you have so many injuries and you got so many backups out there, playing a game and having 10 penalties, you pretty much are going to shoot yourself in the foot. You don't have the type of team, the talent, to recover from those type of mistakes like you're saying.
Yeah, and so to your point, yes, there is blame to be placed at the foot of the coaches. There's blame to be placed at the foot of the players. There's blame to be placed at the foot of the GM.
Everybody.
I mean, you're 2-12. Everybody's got a share in the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, what happens? How do you get better?
How do you
turn it around? And that's going to be a big topic for conversation. Fred, thanks for the call. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Tim in Atlantic Beach, who's up next here on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Tim, how you doing?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Doing good.
Well, tough loss. But, hey, I just wanted to give a shout-out to one guy who always remains an unsung hero. He seemed like he was in on every play, and he's been the star of our defense, and that's Posluszny. I mean, every time there's a tackle, every time there's a play, the guy is either there or within arm's length.
Oh, yeah. He's a terrific football player. He really is. He rarely makes mistakes. I think he's been flagged for 5 penalties in his career. I mean, the guy, you know, has been in every play but one this year, and I think it was when he had to go out and, you know, retie a shoe, or maybe he had a helmet pop off something. The guy is just a terrific football player. He is a dictionary definition of a middle linebacker. He's a tough guy. He's great in the locker room. He's great with the media. He's terrific with fans. The guy was built to be a football player, and that's exactly what he is. And I think a lot of Jaguars fans will take from this season one visual of him, which is blood streaming down the face as he's hunkered down at the goal line. He's a football player, no doubt about it. He is a really good football player.
Yeah,
Tim. You hit it right on the head. Guy can play.
I just would just like to see, you know, more tackles for losses. I mean, yeah, he makes a lot of tackles, but I mean, you're talking about 6 or 7 yards down the field, you know, and that's, to me, that's routine. You know, he is solid. You know, I mean, very consistent. You know, definitely not taking that away from him. But he needs some more guys around him.
Yeah. And he's playing a position that, quite frankly, is not an impact position in the NFL. It's a position that if you don't have a good one there, you can be exposed. But it's not a game-changing position like a pass rusher or a cover corner with the proliferation of the passing game.
In the coverage, a little better and getting more depth in that cover too. You know, when he's in that linebacker position, he plays a little bit. I guess sucked in a little bit on the little more than he should on the run fakes, and it's
but
been a little bit exposed.
And how many times that happens? Once or twice a game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, but it happens again, though. And when you that because that's the most crucial part.
Is he a perfect player? No, but he's a pretty. I mean, listen,
he's solid. But I mean, I'm not going to just say
defensive MVP
for this team.
Yeah.
Yes, this year.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, I would say that.
All right, Jaguars lose it 24-3. This portion of the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show is brought to you by Isilborn Chiropractic and Sports Medicine. We'll take time out, come back with more of your calls at 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You could be driving a brand-new Kia Optima by registering to win Conn's Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win. We're back with more right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here. Pick up your Denny's Playmakers card at participating Denny's locations. Learn how you can win a mega Jaguars fan experience to Sunday's home finale. No purchase is necessary. Time now for the carry of the day presented by Waste Pro. Let Waste Pro USA carry the load for you. Marco, who had the carry of the day?
Carry of the day was a 12-yard carry. It wasn't many great carries, but I was able to find one as Montel broke out around the outside in that second half for a 12-yard carry.
Has Montel Owens showed you enough that you think he could be your number two running back or a number one running back?
Well, like I said, in training camp, I thought he should have been the guy that was really toting a lot more of the carries if it wasn't Rashad Jennings. So, you know, I do, yes. I think that Montel should go into next season as a number two running back.
Would you rather have him as a number two running back and kind of limit what he does on special teams, or have him on special teams and be a number three or four running back?
I think he's a number two running back for running downs. You figure, I think you're going to need another running back that'll come in there for those third downs between him and Maurice, mm-hmm, and more of a pass receiving type of running back.
He's good on pass protection.
But between the two of those two, I mean, I think when you get Maurice back, it's, you know, you won't need as much of Montel. So, yes, you know, he'll be able to play that number two position and stay at that, contribute on the special teams.
All right, 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. Let's go to Doug, cell phone caller on his way to Georgia. Doug, you're up on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.
Actually, I'm in Georgia now.
Ah, you've made it.
Made it. On the way up to North Carolina tonight. Anyway.
Well, drive safely.
Excuse me?
I said drive safely.
Well, I always do. I was looking. I called specifically about the Brassy, the guy Whimper thing.
Yeah.
With not reporting. And is it the responsibility of, whose responsibility is it to make sure that the ref actually says so-and-so is reporting? Is it up to the team to say that, or did the ref screw up?
Well, according to a tweet from Ryan O'Halloran of the Times Union, Whimper said that he checked in and that the referee nodded at him. And when that's what you do. You go over there, you get the confirmation, and then the ref will announce it. Now, I'm just kind of putting myself in Guy Whimper's shoes. If you go in there and you give the, hey, I'm checking in, and he gives you the nod, and then you go about your business, you go in the huddle or whatever else to do your thing, you're not listening for the announcement necessarily. You may or may not hear it. But once can you say yes that you need to hear the announcement? I suppose you could say somebody's got to be in charge of that. But frankly, I've never heard any coaching staff say, we have a guy who's in charge of making sure that they announce the guy who's checked in. I've never heard that.
Yeah, the thing is that I didn't see Malarkey say anything. I mean, it didn't show that way. Why did he go out there and talk about it with the refs so they could pick up the flag?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's. I don't know what happened there. I mean, frankly,
it seems to me They just accepted it, and they showed Whimper on the sideline saying that he did it, and blah blah blah. But he didn't see Malarkey fighting for him.
I don't know if that's reviewable.
I don't know if it's reviewable, but you can still. And they can't watch it, but you can say, hey. Didn't Whimper come in? And maybe the guy just forgot and just had to jog his memory.
Well,
I don't know
how many times in a situation like similar to that have you seen a referee change his mind after a coach says something about it?
Well, the thing is, he may. I'm just saying is that the Whimper. I mean, to me, it's a fault of the refs who seem to have it. Into the Jacks today, it seems to me, as much as I watched it. I had a real problem with that call on Brzezinski.
Yeah, and there was another one that they didn't really show that Jeff talked. They didn't show on TV very well that Jeff talked about on a blow to the head for Henny.
For Henny, yeah.
And frankly, Russell Allen hit was sort of nickel and dime. Yeah, the Jaguars have not gotten a lot of those 50-50 calls this year, have they?
And the other thing is that, Henny can have his brains beaten in, just like Gerard always used to.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't call anything. Yeah. It's unfortunate. I guess it's the problem with being Jacksonville, and that we don't get those kind of calls unless we're good.
You would hate to think that that was what was going on, but there's a lot of evidence to that point.
It sure seems like it.
Yeah. All right, Doug. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. 800-3. Yeah, I don't know what you do if you're Mike Malarkey in that situation. By the time they threw the flag and they make the announcement, then you go over and talk to Whimper. He says, "Yeah, I checked in." Well,
But they didn't make the announcement, and that comes to the awareness, and that comes to what the coach was saying. There was a lack of focus. I mean, every time that he comes in there, every time he says. 68 is reporting. Yeah.
And what do you do? You kind of brush.
And
the
then the next thing that happens is what? The announcer says 68 is reporting eligible.
Yeah.
He didn't do it that time. Hold up. Yeah. Hey, you got to stand up. I'm in. Did you hear me? Did you see me?
Yeah.
That's being aware.
So you think it's on Whimper?
It's on Whimper.
Okay.
But it's also on the coach, too. You got to hurry up. Did you see 68? I mean, somebody's got to be aware of what's going on. That's just a lack of focus, a lack of awareness. It's just got one foot in the locker room, one foot in the door ready to go. As it pertains to being focused on the game. Yeah, they're more concerned about something else.
Have you ever been around a team that had a guy who was in charge of that?
Not in charge, the guy that comes in. Matter of fact,
right,
coach. Yeah. And I was actually one of the guys that would come in on the field goal.
Yeah.
And I had to, every time, I wore a 90 number, so yeah. I had to come in. I was at a tight end position, yeah. So I had to report every time. Every time I came in, I went straight to the referee. I didn't just look at him and brush my I tapped him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, I got you. You see me. We've talked.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know. Whimper has gotten a little complacent. And in a game like this, without the lack of focus that these guys should have, you see by the penalties, he wasn't paying attention. He was just going through the motions type of deal. If there was some urgency and really a focus on trying to get things done, you would have noticed that, hold on, they didn't say it over the loudspeaker like they normally do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right that he didn't hear it. Obviously, it wasn't announced. I just, to me – There's never been a situation where if you think the guy says yes, you get it.
If the referee did not say it over that loudspeaker,
and here's the big thing,
then it's Whimper's fault.
The question is, the question is, did Whimper check and did the guy say yes, and then, or did Whimper think he checked in and he didn't? I mean, again, we'll have to. I'm going to wait to see the All 22 to see if they can, mm-hmm. if they show that later in the week on that. Interesting to see what happened as far as that's concerned. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Robert's in Murray Hill. Robert, you're up on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.
Three questions. First, who was covering number 80? Second of all...
On which play?
There were several. And then, second of all, who was covering... I mean, sorry. If we get the first round draft pick, who are we going to take? And thirdly, what about that spot call where they just kind of didn't give us the first down there? And I'll take your answers off the air.
Okay, here are your answers for off the air. A number of guys, because he was in for a number of plays.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
talking about
know,
number 80, talking about Fasano.
Who was covering Fasano. Typically, that's a linebacker or a safety because he's a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
It would be different based on formation and
so that was just poor communication
sort of
and coverage for the whole linebacker and secondary group.
Number two, who would they take? Nobody knows the answer to that. You can ask it now, but the fact is that nobody knows the answer to that. I can give you a list of guys who are probably going to be in the conversation, if you want. But because the combine hasn't happened, you know, scouting has happened, and they're for the most part, the people are known as far as who, this guy's going to be a top 10 consideration. This guy's going to be a top 10 consideration. That guy's going to be a top 10 consideration. But there are so many guys this year because there's not that pure number one. So give me a moment and let me make sure I don't miss anybody. But some of the guys that will be in the conversation. Jarvis Jones from Georgia. Luke Jokel, who's a left tackle from Texas A&M, will be in the conversation. Demontre Moore, who's a defensive end from Texas A&M, is going to be in the conversation. I don't know if Womack, the guard from Alabama, is going to be in the conversation, but he'll go in the top 10, I think. He'll be one of those rare guards that goes that high. Manti Te'o will be in the conversation. Somebody might fall in love with Geno Smith, who really needs a quarterback and decides that's who they need. There's a defensive tackle at Utah named Star Lutulele, who some people have graded very highly. Let's see. It's a Demontre. Barkevious Mingo at LSU, and Sam Montgomery at LSU might get a look there. Bjorn Werner at Florida State is going to get a look there. And there's probably a couple of guys who will rise late from this thing. But those are basically the guys you're going to look at. Now, what have I said a lot of? Lutulele, defensive tackle. Jarvis Jones, outside linebacker. Demontre Moore, defensive end. Teo's an inside linebacker. Jokel is a offensive tackle. Barkevious Mingo and Montgomery are undersized defensive end pass rushers. Bjorn Werner, defensive end. A lot of guys on the defensive line and who could potentially be pass rushers who could go up there high in the draft. Geno Smith, obviously the quarterback. I think you have a lot of guys who could potentially help you. And I think this is one of the intriguing things, Marco. We talked a little bit before the game,
mm-hmm.
that I really like about what this offseason could bring. Because if Babin continues to show that he can make plays, which he's shown in the first three games, if Mincy can return to some semblance of what he was last year, if you can get some more, coordinated work, as you talk about up front,
mm-hmm.
and get one more guy who can rush the passer.
Well, Austin Lane, you got to remember he'll be back again. Won't he be back? I think he's under. Yeah,
I believe so.
So now you got Austin Lane. You see how Branch, you still
Branch
got him
has to develop
to show, get him to work. I mean, the offseason is going to be important for the younger guys, for Blackman, for Branch. We're going to find out a lot about these guys by the way that they prepare during this offseason.
If you're going to ask me to, one of two things is going to happen. Either one, somebody's going to fall in love and feel like they really need Geno Smith, and they're going to, trade up to get him. Somebody who's mm-hmm. middle of the draft or who just really feels like they need a quarterback and they like him for a system they're running or whatever else. That's one. Somebody may fall in love with Manti Te'o because of his leadership, but I just can't see an inside linebacker going number one. I would bet that one of the two Texas A&M guys, either the offensive tackle or the defensive end, or Jarvis Jones goes number one.
Go number one. Yeah, so, I can see that.
This is not a great – this is a pretty deep draft, but it doesn't start high.
Right.
Right? There are a lot of good players between 15 and 50, it looks like. Top 15, not as strong as a lot of past years, particularly when you're talking about quarterback.
I agree.
800-35 – again, this may all change as somebody – knocks the ball out of the park on a workout or something. But
shorts, really?
I mean, it happens, and sometimes. And by the way, sometimes it pays off. Jason Pierre-Paul, right?
He was a good player, though. He had some good film.
He was, but he went from 20, a guy who was 28 to 30 to 40 to, really rising. And then it happens on the other side. One of the all-time classic combine hits. Mike Mamula, right? Who did you play with him?
He was in Philadelphia. No, he wasn't there when I was there.
Okay, yeah. A guy who never did anything.
Never did do that.
All right, back to the phone line. Steve is on the west side. Steve, you're up on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.
Hey there.
Hey, Steve.
I'd like to just say something to you on behalf of the fans. And this is, you guys, your show is mostly about the technical side of football and how the individual players are playing and all that kind of stuff. And I think that all might be well and good if we were a really great team and our team was performing well. But beyond that, I'd like to just say something as far as the fans. I've been a fan for 17 years, season ticket holder for 6 years, numerous games every year, closet full of Jaguar stuff. You know, I watch all the games. I send Jaguar stuff to friends of mine all over the country and overseas. But my question is, speaking on behalf of the fans, Why should we continue doing that? I mean, every year we're promised next year. Next year is the year the Jaguars are going to play on the par of the Atlanta Falcons or the Broncos or any of the other good teams around the country. And that's my first question. Why should we support the fans other than the obvious question that they're the home team? But that's not good enough that they're just the home team. When does the team show up? Another question is, when do the players in their post-game conference, when do they stop talking about execution and how we got to do better next week? And when do they apologize to the fans? The fan base is the reason that there's a team here and those guys wear a Jacksonville Jaguars uniform. And I never hear a word from the coach, from the quarterback, from the players, from the front office. I never hear anything said, an apology to the fans that we're sorry we're putting such a poor product on the field. And every week you guys spend your money, and every week you go home mad and frustrated and upset and disappointed. I mean, 17 years of this, don't you think this is just about enough? And every Sunday I watch these great teams around the NFL playing exciting football, and the fans going nuts and the bleachers, and I keep thinking to myself, my God, when do we get to do that? So I'd like to just hear your comments off the air about when do the fans get something back from the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Sure.
Goodbye.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right. Some interesting thoughts. Let me do. Let me take this in kind of three stages. One, you mentioned 17 years. Let's not make it out that they've never had given anything to and have not been to the play. They've been to the playoff. It's been a while, and they haven't been to the playoff much lately. But it's not 17 years of futility. But certainly lately, it's not been particularly good. And when you have one playoff win in the last 10 years, I get the frustration. The question about why support the team, frankly, I'm not going to sit here and tell somebody what they need to spend their money on. That's their choice. All right. If you want to spend your money on it, as long as you're, comfortable with the ramifications of your decisions, that's you spend your money on what you want to spend your money on. Some fans are fans who spend money because they to buy season tickets and so forth, because they want to come out to the games, because this is where they want to be on Sunday. Win or lose, They're the diehards. Maybe there are, I don't know, 30,000 of those, and it's been a pretty similar number from the beginning that this, hey, this is just where we want to be. It's the NFL team. We're one of 31 cities in the country to have an NFL team. This is where you want to be. Second group of people are those who want to come out and want to be here when the team's winning. And if you only want to be here when the team's winning, and, you know, just recognize you're not paying for a guaranteed win. You're paying for a performance. And to me, if you're in that group, as long as the team gives you a good performance, win or lose, you need to be satisfied. Now, what's been frustrating this year, particularly early in the season at home, they did not give good performances. And I get that that's frustrating and that, you know, that would bother somebody. And if you're in that group that is paying for wins, then you haven't gotten them. So from a football standpoint, those are the decisions you have to make in terms of how much support. From a bigger picture standpoint, I'll tell you this, that it is vitally important for the city, I believe, for the Jaguars to be here. Mm-hmm. And I think that the risk of losing the team now is much less than it was several years ago. Fans have been great this year. And I absolutely believe that having Shad Khan as the owner has stabilized what's happening here from a structural standpoint. But I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Jacksonville would be worse off to lose the Jaguars than if they never got the team to begin with. Mm. So that, you know, you talk about supporting, that's a reason. Why support? Well, that's a reason to support. It's good for the city. Then the point about when do the players apologize? Well, there have been a number of times in this year where I've had interviews with players who have said, we've got to do this. You know, Jeremy Mincy is a great example of a guy who says this all the time. We've got to play better for ourselves. We've got to play better for our teammates. We've got to play better for the fans. We've got to play better for the coaches. We've got to play better for the city. Now, what doesn't happen is you don't have, in any case, somebody coming out, you just don't see it, say, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to everybody. That's just not part of the culture. You're not going to see that. You can have people say, yes, we need to be better. We need to be better for you. We need to be better for this. I think we've gotten to a point with this season that people who are frustrated will find, you know, will expect things that don't happen anywhere in the NFL to happen here to make them feel better about it. And it's just, you know, some of those things just aren't going to happen, and you've got two more games to endure until the offseason and then see, you know, what the Jaguars can do in the offseason to try to build towards something. I thought this was a team this year that could be a competitive team, to be in it in December, that it'd have some, I think my thought was they would have some playoff scenarios in December. I thought that was, that's what they could accomplish. It didn't happen. If they hadn't had the injuries and if they'd won those overtime games, things might be different. Mm. But it hasn't been. And if Gabbert took a more substantial step forward, if LaRon Robinson hadn't had the concussions, if Daryl Smith was in there, if Maurice Jones-Drew, blah, blah, blah. You can say, what if? Didn't happen. So here we are, a 2-12 season. And as a fan, that's tough.
It's tough.
I get it.
Especially over the past few years. But, you know, looking going forward, and you think about next season, now you add Babin, you get Daryl Smith back, you got two guys on defense that play at a Pro Bowl level. You get Maurice back, and you got him out there playing at a Pro Bowl level, and a potential Pro Bowler in what you see in what Shorts is doing, if he can continue to mature. And also you add in Blackman and him getting better. So now on the player standpoint, you get these guys coming back. Now you got the pieces, players that can make plays that are coming back that can help you in your efforts. Adding on, you know, whoever you get from the draft, I'm sure he's going to be looking to do some things in the free agency. So once you get some star power back on the field, instead, because you got to recognize – there's been a lot of backups out there, a lot of changes. Health is going to be extremely important to having those aspirations that the fans are looking for going into next season.
And I'll say this as well. One of the most intriguing guys this offseason for the entire league is going to depend on what the Ravens do with Joe Flacco. He's at the end of his contract. They've struggled here of late offensively. So will they do something different? Will they decide, hey, we're gonna go in a different direction? If Flacco becomes a free agent, and I think it's a little bit of a long shot, that could really throw a wrinkle into the free agency period this offseason, but I think it's a 80-20 chance that he stays in Baltimore. Mm. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Rena's on the way to Tallahassee. Rena, you're up on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple of questions. The first one is, as we approach the end of the season, if you were Khan, which decisions or what changes would you start first? And do you think for next season we're going to give Mojo a new contract?
All right. If I was the owner, the first thing I would do would make a dramatic move, something that would really get people's attention. I would dramatically raise the salary of the post-game radio host.
I'm with you on that.
That'd be the first thing I would do.
And the co-host.
Both of them. Both the post-game radio guys. I think big, big salary increases. That's the first thing. What's going to be interesting, I could tell you what might happen or what I might do or what we don't know. There's nothing to use as a baseline because Shad Khan has not been in this position before. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of process he makes to see how it would go. So as far as Maurice Jones-Drew, I don't think you're going to see him get a new contract. Here's why. He's one more year left on his deal. And after that, if the Jaguars want to, they can franchise him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it makes sense to throw money at a guy who held out and then was hurt most of the year. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that they're going to reward that kind of behavior.
I agree. I mean, I don't think that Maurice would have had a better chance of getting that, that holdout type of stuff next, this season.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yep.
Going into 2013 season. So, no, I don't think he'll – that's not going to be an issue going into next season, I don't think.
And by the way, just as far as free agency is concerned, one other guy who we talked about this past year was Cliff Averill,
mm-hmm.
who's a local guy with the Lions. He he was franchised, turned down a multi-year deal, wanted to play for the franchise tag, did not have as big a deal, as big a performance this year. He's been okay, 9.5 mm-hmm. sacks, I think, at this point. Might be a guy if the Jaguars wanted to go after. Imagine those bookends, Babin and Averill, rushing mm-hmm. the passer. Might be something the Jaguars will look at. Just a couple of the names that I think will come out here. Rena, thanks for the call. Sip more, pay less. Any size premium roast coffee, soft drink, or sweet tea is now just $1 at McDonald's. Any day, any size, any time, McDonald's. I'm loving it. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. We do have an injury update coming in, a tweet from the locker room. We'll get you updated on that for the Jaguars. More to come on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart, 6 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. If you want to join the Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show, you can also tweet to me at Cole Pepper. Reports from our friends at Action News. I think it's Brent Martineau, although they all share the same one. The looks like Dwight Lowry in a boot and getting an X-ray on the foot or ankle or something. So that's going to be a bit of an issue. A couple of responses, by the way, via the Twitterverse from an earlier caller who was asking why should fans continue to support the the Jaguars. Ian says why? Because that's what fans do. And Paul says, gee, I didn't know we fans had an ombudsman who would speak for us.
Oh.
Pulled out, didn't expect to say ombudsman during the broadcast. And I will say this, you can, when you, it happens both ways, media to fans, fans to media. When a fan says this is what the fans want, well, guess what? The fans do not have one singular mind. And when the media says this is what the fans think, we have to remember the same thing.
Same thing.
It happens both ways. 800-355-NFL1. Saqib is up on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Saqib, how you doing?
What's up, boy?
What's going on there, Saqib?
Hey, man. I know I call you guys up every single week. I'm just, in my wildest dreams, I have never thought that Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be 2-12. Let's be real about it, okay? I know we don't have the talent that, New England has or all these other teams that are contending. But let's be real, man. This has been a disaster, okay? Not a disaster. And what disappointed me the most is we're all in. Obviously, we're not all in because we don't have the talent, and there has to be a lot of changes on players this year. Let's say I know you guys are, you guys can't say it because you guys work for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but me as a fan, I can say it because I support this team every single year. I've supported the Jacksonville Jaguars since 97, 98. Mm. I've been going to the games since about 99, 2000, okay? And every, it just gets to that point that it's so bad to say that we cannot do anything.
Yeah, Listen, Marco and I have always said what we thought. We've been honest with the listeners, saying what we think. And I'll say what I think you're thinking, which is, why can't you just press the fast forward button and get to the end of this thing and try to get some things changed and fixed, right?
Yeah, I mean, 2-12. I mean, you guys are always, every week you guys say, "Oh, this guy had a good game." Okay, I understand Cecil is having a good year. Blackman is trying to improve, but this quarterback is a disaster. Okay, this quarterback situation, is a disaster. Okay, we need to find a long-term answer.
Yeah, but where is that? I mean, here's my point. You've got what you've got right now.
You guys said Flacco. I understand Flacco has been in the playoffs every single year since he's been in the NFL.
Saqib, Joe Flacco would be an upgrade for what the Jaguars have. I'm not sure. Right. You know, he's one of those guys. It's sort of the, you know, Tony Romo. Hey, is he a?
I want to draft another quarterback. Nope. I'm tired of waiting.
Well, you're going to have to, Saqib, buddy. I'm telling you, you're going to have to, unless you have a magic wand or a magic pill that's suddenly going to turn one of these quarterbacks and a bunch of these defensive players into Pro Bowlers. There is going to have to be a waiting period. You know, now listen. Maybe I'm wrong about Geno Smith. And maybe the Jaguars draft Geno Smith number one or number two, and maybe he comes right in and does what Russell Wilson has done in Seattle.
But why do you think Russell Wilson, a second, third round pick, and these other quarterbacks have done a great job, and is it a system? Or what's going on that we cannot have that?
Well, for starters, if you're going to talk about a guy like Andrew Luck or RG3, they're just supreme talents. I mean, they're young players, but they're huge talents, and
I think you have
to
say the same thing about Russell Wilson.
But with Russell Wilson, here's what I think
Russell Wilson, coming out was one of the best quarterbacks right there with those two.
Okay, but everybody in the NFL, every single team in the NFL whiffed on Russell Wilson for two rounds. If teams in the NFL knew that Russell Wilson was going to play like he has this year, he'd have gone to the top 10. No doubt about it, right?
You know, and it's just because of the way that they do. They got this format. There's a lot of scouts that have never played, first of all, a whole lot of them. Okay, so they got this little, you know, chart. If you're X tall, you run X fast, and you weigh such, then no. But I watched Russell Wilson at NC State. Then when he went to Wisconsin, he was right there, in my opinion, right there with RG3 and Luck. It's just, certain guys just don't get the hype.
Here's the other thing about Russell Wilson, about why he's been able to perform right away as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fifth-year guy. He's 5 years
in
college.
Winky.
He had some minor league baseball.
Mature.
He was a mature guy. He's obviously a very good talent. I made this comment to you, Marco, as we were watching what was going on in the Seattle-Buffalo game, that Russell Wilson, right now as a rookie, plays like David Garrard did in 2007.
Yeah.
I mean, that which is impressive. Very mobile, runs, has good vision running the football, has a good arm. I mean, that's what he looks like. He looks like a healthy David Garrard as a rookie. And you would. So the question is, with a guy like Russell Wilson, where's his ceiling? You know, he's a mature guy, five-year guy in college, played for two different schools, played minor league baseball. Sometimes those guys don't have a lot of room between where they come into the league and where their ceiling is. I don't know. I think it's very difficult to judge.
I think it's going to be the talent that they put around, just like any other quarterback. You know, they get some good wide receivers, all of a sudden the thing changes, unless you're Brady and Peyton Manning. Those two, they make the other guys they got around them that much better.
And let me tell you my concern is that the Jaguars spend a year with a mediocre quarterback and wind up with 6 or 7 wins. Not a guy who's growing, a patch, a guy, you know, somebody who will get you, a bridge guy, get you to the next guy. Because when that happens, then you miss your chance at finding that franchise quarterback. The Jaguars have really never had a franchise quarterback, a true franchise quarterback. Mark Brunell had some good years, but he was never a Manning, Brady, Rodgers, you know, go down the list of that type of top quarterback. They've never had that guy. They hoped that they had that guy when they drafted Blaine Gabbert.
But you got to look at also, some of this has to go on the guys that they're throwing to. These guys lead the league in the most drop passes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how can you as a quarterback, you know, that goes on the quarterback stat sheet.
Yeah.
And then we are taking a stat of how many drops that they do have, but ultimately when you look at things, it's not receptions, touchdowns, drops, you know, but at the quarterback, it's completions and incompletions. And a lot of those times, it hasn't been Gabbert's or Henny's fault.
I agree.
These guys got to catch the ball more consistently.
But if I were to ask you right now to bet Ed Rocco's money on whether
Big E,
on whether Gabbert or Henny is going to be a championship quarterback.
You know what? They can get that done because there's been quarterbacks that get there off a great defense,
okay,
and so other guys around them.
Because that's saying, well, there maybe Trent Dilfer or Brad Johnson.
That's it.
That's not a franchise quarterback.
Not that may necessarily. Be a, I mean, but you, it's really more so you have a franchise team that can get the Super Bowl. I mean, you talk all this stuff about these quarterbacks. Troy Aikman is nothing without Emmitt Smith, you know, Irving,
that
Novak,
offensive line, yeah.
Offensive line, and that defense. Mm-hmm. You know, Terry Bradshaw is not the same without the Steel Curtain, Stallworth, Lynn Swann. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go on and on. Steve Young, great quarterback, but who did he have? Jerry Rice, yeah. Roger Craig. I mean, you got
agreed.
These.
But here's my point, though, right now. You've got at least two wide receivers who look like they can play,
mm-hmm.
right? Offensive line needs to get better. Yes, there have been some drops. Way too many. I don't think it's impossible to judge the quarterbacks. I think you have to, you know, grade on a curve a little bit, but I don't think it's impossible to judge the quarterbacks based on a lot of things, some of which is the eye test about, you know, how do they look when they're sitting back there in the pocket on third down and the rush is coming on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brady is never worried. Have you ever seen Tom Brady look worried?
Maybe
back there?
In the pocket.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and it's not even about scared. It's just it's a calmness. It's, you know,
scared.
He goes to zen.
It's scared.
Maybe. Well, that's not how I would categorize.
Chicken.
I don't know how I would categorize it. I'm talking about he looks like he's in control of what's happening
right.
out there.
Yeah,
right? He's the Neo in the Matrix, right? He's controlled this thing. Who was it? Played in the Tron remake, Tron 2. Jeff Daniels. Was not Jeff. Jeff Bridges. Not Jeff Daniels. Jeff Bridges. You know. He's in control.
He's in control.
Saqib, hang in there. Two more games to go, 120 minutes of football.
There we go.
We'll take time out. More calls when we come back. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. More of the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck. It fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today. Proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hey, by the way, Marco,
mm-hmm.
Don't get Wally pipped now. You're not going to be in here next week.
Right.
J.P. Shadrick's going to be sitting in that
My
seat.
My man, Jay Pizzle. The people will be feeling really good about J.P. being here, though.
I mean, don't get Wally pipped. You know Wally Pipp, right?
I don't know who
Wally Pipp was the first baseman for the New York Giants.
Uh-huh.
Had an injury, and they moved another fella in there by the name of Lou Gehrig. And 2,130 games later, Gehrig came out of the lineup.
baby.
Wally
well,
Pipp.
Don't get what's my man out in San Francisco that just got benched.
Alex Smith.
Don't get Alex Smith.
We might have the Colin Kaepernick of post-game analysts
But
coming
I think
in.
That, you know, JP loves the outdoors. He's an outdoorsman. You know, it's going to be tough to keep him indoors.
You think so?
Yeah.
he said he'd put a little extra sunblock on the five head today before he got out there in South Florida. All right, a few more calls before we call tonight, and I go to a Christmas party. Brandon is in Jacks Beach. He's up here on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Another disappointing loss. The way it goes here lately. I know we all have our eyes on the draft, but I think we need to look at something a little more important. And don't get me wrong, I like Malarkey. I think Malarkey has been dealt a bad hand with Gene, but I don't like the way that he comes to the podium, and he's just so monotonous. I think he needs to, you know, get a little fire under these guys' ass, you know, and come to the table and tell everybody, you know, that we stink. We don't play good, you know, and we need to change a lot of things. On the other hand, he, you know, he comes and says, you know, we do our best. We're trying. You know, the next time we're going to, you know, do, you know, we're going to have make some more passes or change some things up. But I don't think that I don't think he has that fire that we need to get this team going.
Well, here, let me give you my perspective on this.
Sure.
Mike Mularkey is not a yeller and a screamer. Clearly, that's not the kind of you know, it's not his personality. You can't fake that. Players will know. I will also tell you that. In this day and age in the National Football League, you don't get in a press conference the same thing that players get in a meeting. Okay, so I think you have to recalibrate your expectations about what's going to happen. The guy comes to a press conference after a game, after a disappointing loss in a difficult season. He's going to be down. He's not going to be, you know, singing and whistling. And I can tell you, as a guy who's covered the National Football League for, I think this is my 19th or 20th season, I can't remember now, Mike Mularkey has been the most honest coach that I have covered in terms of being forthcoming in press conferences during the week. I appreciate that. There are times he won't answer a question. He'll tell you, I'm not going to answer because it's, you know, going to hurt competitive advantage or whatever else, or I'm not going to get into it. I appreciate the honesty about it. And I think, from a fan standpoint, you ought to appreciate the honesty of it. But he also is not going to sit there and call out players in a press conference. That's not his personality. So we had somebody complaining last week about something that Mularkey said in a post-game interview, you know, saying he was proud that his players continue to give effort. Jaguars are 2-12, and that means that everything is wrong. Hey, they don't have a fight song like Miami does. Hey, they ring a bell before the fourth quarter. Hey, they have the prowl. Hey, you know, the cheerleaders' uniforms aren't the right color. Whatever. I mean, this is the – Jaguars fans have not been through this before. And I can tell you, though, having spent some time around a team that really struggled drastically, I was doing play-by-play for JU – Cliff Warren's first year there, when he inherited a kind of a mess of a transitional year, they went 1-26, and there were, you know, obviously under much less scrutiny than an NFL team, but there are guys, you know, Cliff, coaches, so forth, who are saying, "Geez, what in the world? You know, maybe this is the problem. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem." When it gets right down to it, usually it's three things: one, do you have enough good players? Two, are they properly prepared? And three, are the guys you're facing, you know, a decent, the right matchup, a decent matchup? And if the answer to those are no, you're probably not going to win. So, I mean, listen, we'll have two more games to nitpick and find the little things.
We find the big things in 2013.
The big things is what you're looking for. Brandon, thanks for the call. Let's go to Dan in Melbourne, Florida, who's up next on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Appreciate your show.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I did agree with your last caller's comments, but I really appreciate your response to that. I live in Melbourne. Like I said, I grew up in Jacksonville, moved down here about 10 years ago. And when I go into Sports Authority, Dick's, whatever it is, it's half Miami Dolphins, it's half Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We've been all in. I supposedly we're the Jacksonville Jaguars market, but there's nothing for the fans here. And as much as I want to go to my friend's house and watch the Jags game, nobody seems interested. Nobody's all in, quote-unquote, here. How can we get that here? I know winning is the answer, the short answer, but in your perspective, how do we get in? How do we get Jacksonville, the Jaguars at least, down here?
Well,
It's
going to be time. You figure, you look at the Miami Dolphins have been around for generations. You got grandparents now, great-grandparents who's, you know, gave tickets over. Same thing with Tampa, even though, you know, their history may not be as luxurious, but they've been around for a while.
Based on the attendance in Miami today, a lot of those grandparents just took them to the grave with them.
Yeah,
but there weren't a lot of people there.
But they've been around for so long. These teams have been around in a lot of history, you know, and people are growing. I mean, I see people a lot, you know, and they say, wow, man, I've been a fan for as long as I've been alive. You're talking about guys 50, 60 years old. You don't have that with the Jaguars this year. You know, the team, these guys, anybody that started as a baby, being a Jaguar fan, they just got at the age where they can buy their own ticket. You know what I mean? So, yep. You know, I think that's what it is. It's just a matter. It's just time.
I will also say this. One of the things that the Jaguars implemented this past year, or re-implemented, was the Jaguars Caravan, where they went around. This was in June and July, I think, where they went around to a number of different markets trying to, you know, grow the fan base out and beyond. I know they were in Palm Coast, Port Orange area. I don't know, if there was a plan or not to get to specifically to get to Melbourne or not. But that's part of the plan to grow this thing. Yes, winning is a big thing. My guess is, my expectation is that Melbourne is one of those cities that the Jaguars really want to have, you know, part of the fan base. We have a Melbourne affiliate down there on radio. So it's going to take time, and what had happened in the previous 3 or 4 years is that the Jaguars had been run so lean by, marketing money and budgets and so forth, because Wayne Weaver's getting ready to sell the team. Didn't want to have a bunch of extra money out there. We'll see how things change as it goes along, but, this was a – I think things have changed a little bit in terms of the way that the team is being marketed, because Shad Khan has said publicly that he wants to grow the brand to be not only a Jacksonville, Northeast Florida, to be a national, international brand with the Jaguars. And Melbourne will be in that.
Yeah, I think that, like, to the point of the listener, it's got to start first focus on Florida. Capture Florida. Before you can take the world, you got to at least take the local
market.
Well,
I don't think you have to do one or the other. I think you can do both. I think you can do both at the same time, just in different ways. Again, playing a game in London is a way to do that.
Yeah, but you won't have the same loyalty where if you don't have a better team with that out of the country.
I think it's two different things. I think you're more likely to get fans without winning overseas because you don't have the same kind of focus and passion by as many people there as you do here. I think you need to win is certainly the biggest thing with garnering fans, whether it's here or elsewhere. And as for the point about, you know, trying to buy a Jaguars jersey in Melbourne or somewhere else, for starters, just go to the Jaguars website if you want to buy one. But secondly, those things are usually driven by the ability of the retailer to sell it. And if the team's not winning and hasn't won much lately, people don't buy it. That's the way
you don't
it
have any. I mean, all you have is just the Maurice Jones-Drew jersey.
Well, I would bet there'll be an 84 and a 14 out there very soon. Yeah. All right, thanks for the call, Dan. One more to go. Let's go to Kevin in McClenny, who will wrap us up here on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I got a question for you. Who do you think is going to be safe? Right now, I'm just thinking that you got, the Scobie and Anger, they're both in there. But I only see Blackman in shorts is being the only one that's not on the trading block.
Well, guys who are under contract certainly would be safe from a
standpoint. Or a trade.
But if you're going to start talking about who are the core group of players going forward, I think Mike Harris certainly is in that group. Poslesny's in that group. Mm-hmm. Mincy would be prohibitive to trade, and I think you expect him to have a better year next year. Babin, I think, is going to be here. Eugene Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
Wanneri. Meester is not going anywhere.
Brewster.
Bruce will be back next year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Would they trade him for a better player?
I think the trade bait is going to be that first round pick. That's going to be the ability to go ahead and trade, either get more picks or now you got a first round pick that you can trade for a superstar player.
Yeah, well, in the first round pick, this is a soft draft this year.
True. You're right about that. But I mean, that's probably the biggest bait you got. You don't have many players that a lot of teams actually want.
Yeah, I hear you.
People can talk about wanting to trade a guy, but there's got to be interest on the other party. So we'll see how it plays out, Kevin. It'll certainly be something we'll keep an eye on. Appreciate the call. That'll do it for us here on the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show after the Jaguars lose it 24-3 in Miami. Two more games to go. Sunday, Jaguars will be here to take on the New England Patriots. Marco will not be here. He just can't stand to look.
I know. I hate it. But it's a family. It's a family deal.
He'll be back.
It's all about the family.
See the season finale against the Titans on the road this week. Remember, Mike Mularkey Show tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King Tuesday at 6 as John Osher joins me. And then Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, Ryan Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, and Tony Baselli. Jaguars had a few things to write home about today, including Cecil Shorts, but for the most part, more of the same. Trouble, and the slide continues. The Jaguars need to win out to match their worst record in franchise history. For Ed Rocco, for Linda Fortunato, and for Marco Coleman, Cole Pepper saying, thanks for listening to the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show, and good night from Jaguar Central.